Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw starts now.
What was your abiding feeling about the NFL's first virtual draft? Are you pleased they went through with it? And what was the most difficult aspect of it?
Boy, I loved it. I thought it was just fantastic. It was good theater. It was they did a really good job. I mean, look, the worst aspect of it, how could it take 25 minutes to make the first pick? They were delayed to begin with, and that was a little bit frustrating. And, you know, we're dying for any sports. So people are complaining, and I found that kind of amusing as well. But my goodness gracious, it was just fantastic to have an NFL draft. My abiding feeling is one of joy. There's so many great stories. There's so many wonderful things that you can go over. There's nothing bad about draft day, right? It is very rare that you have like a really negative story. I was a bit, I don't know what the word would be, not overly excited to see Tom Rinaldi jump in on ABC. I figured everybody would watch on either ESPN or the NFL Network, so I decided to watch ABC, and my God, they kept jumping to Tom Rinaldi with one tearjerker story after another. It was just, you know, get on with the football. Let's talk more football. Let's break down more of the football, but that's not what it's about. It's not about what a guy does and how he can do it, although that obviously impacts where they're taken. It's about the family and being there together and everybody meeting these moments. You know, Cesar Ruiz, that was absolutely phenomenal when he just broke down. I guess that's the kind of stuff you want to see. I was more interested in the football stuff, and I kept going back to rosters and trying to figure out how different guys were going to fit in. And you know, it's draft day, so everybody is high-fiving themselves and everybody's feeling like a million. There's not a problem in the world.
Oh, yeah, and there's plenty of time to fill out the football stuff and figure that out and the rosters and all that, but this is a TV show, and it's reality TV, and that's where they delivered. I felt like, you know, the NFL deserves a lot of the criticism it receives for being sort of staged and larger than life and kind of this package patriotism and all the things that are make it easy to criticize with Roger Goodell and sort of the corporate structure and how cold it can feel and how orchestrated and choreographed. Last night felt real. Last night, the NFL came into your living room, plopped down on the couch and said, we're going to be here for a while. Let's get comfortable. And it was. And it was really a connection. And I felt like, you know, I liked going into these guys' houses and seeing how, you know, they were adapting to our new normal for a while and seeing Thomas Dimitroff hug his kid and you see some of the designs of their houses in Cliff Kingsbury. I don't know if that was Cliff Kingsbury or Ryan Gosling playing him in the futuristic movie on the Arizona Cardinals. And then the moment, though, that really summed it up for me was that when you saw Dave Gettleman, and, you know, obviously on Twitter, being what Twitter is, he was sort of made fun of and mocked for having a mask on alone in his house when he made the pick, the Giants general manager. And then you find out later he's in remission from poor lymphoma. He had a mask on because he had an IT assistant in his house, social distancing. And if there was anything that defined or symbolized the 2020 NFL draft under the conditions that they had it, it was Dave Gettleman with a mask at his own home making that pick. And so it was just a night to remember. And I thought they pulled it off given the the odd circumstances. But yeah, the only thing that I didn't like was waiting as long as the Bengals did to make their pick. I thought maybe they were having Wi-Fi issues.
Okay, I don't want to make it sound like I didn't enjoy it. Because, yes, we're all starving for any kind of new sports content, something that, you know, gives us a semblance of normality. And last night was not normal. I won't say that. I mean, everything from Roger Goodell's weird basement and his awkward demeanor. I mean, the guy's worth, what, $300 million? How does his basement look a little bit nicer than that? I mean, I got buddies that have nicer basements than Roger Goodell.
What? Which one of his houses was it? Okay? I mean, that's what you got to remember.
Man, put me on Jerry Jones' yacht, all right? If we're talking about that, they should have done the whole draft from the yacht. I mean, that was the nicest looking thing that I saw throughout the entire evening. But yeah, it took too long to get along with it. They did kind of have that dour veil over the whole thing, you know, these unprecedented times and everything. It's just like, okay, yeah, we get it. Let's just get along with it. But yes, I don't want to make it sound like I didn't enjoy it. I was sitting down and with you know, great attention to it, and it did feel good, you know, getting along with this thing. So as far as the second question, are you pleased they went through with it? Yes, absolutely. They did it as safely as possible, and it did feel like some sort of normality, like I kind of alluded to. And, you know, as far as the talent off the board, yeah, the SEC. How about it? I mean, we all knew and have known for a while that it is the best conference in college football. And with all of these guys, you know, Georgia, Bama, Auburn, all these SEC guys coming off the board so early, and of course LSU as well, not exactly surprising there. But yeah, you know, criticisms, of course, as always with me. But overall, it was nice. And I'm certainly looking forward to tonight, even more so than last night.
Well, I have nothing to complain about with the NFL draft yesterday. I know, but look, I know we were all kind of expecting some sort of technical issues or glitches or something bizarre to happen. And other than, yes, as you guys all pointed out, the waiting for that Bengals pick for a bit, you know, after that, the pace kind of picked up. Everything kind of went seamlessly. You know, I don't have anything to complain about. I'm pleased that they went through with it. I'm glad that they got it done. I didn't think it did any help to just delay it, because you may have a delay in the season potentially. We just don't know. There's so much unknown. I'm glad they went ahead and utilized technology to get through it and get it done. I'm going to say I didn't see any difficult aspects of it other than waiting for that Bengals pick. Good job from the NFL yesterday.
Absolutely pleased that they went through with it. Absolutely pleased that they went through with it. I'm still looking up the word abiding. I'm guessing that it's going to be also that I'm going to remember this draft because of these unprecedented times. Kevin's favorite word.
In these unprecedented times.
That could be a drinking game. Unprecedented times. Take a shot. Don't take a shot of bleach, though. Waiting was difficult. I wonder how the ratings will end up playing out on that. Like, did people tune? I mean, I couldn't wait. It's six. I mean, I made sure that everything, you know, the laundry had been flipped, dinner had been served, dinner had been cleaned up, the dishwasher was running, kids were doing their thing, wife was talking to some women on a Zoom call. Like, everything was in order at 6 o'clock. So by 7:30, I was like, all right, already, let's go. I mean, that was the hardest part of it. But, you know, I'm thrilled they had it. But I really think we should get into this more, if anybody agrees or not. But I really think you missed the fan aspect of it. You know, I didn't like that little zoom over the commissioner's shoulder. It was too forced. I just missed the fans, like, instant reaction and their faces leaning in chairs, or the mass of people like we saw in Nashville last year or in Chicago a couple years ago. I missed the fans' role in all of this, and I wonder if we can get into that later, if you guys think about that and agree with me.
That's a good question.
What selection in the first round caused you to say, wow, first?
Well, I think you're watching and you're waiting and you're wondering. And when the Dolphins were on the clock, after the first four selections, we're pretty much, I think standard selections. I think that, you know, obviously the Lions get their cornerback. You know, people wondered if they would move out of that spot at three. But when the Dolphins announced that they were taking Tua and they were going to take him, risks and all, worried about the medicals, worried about the Wonderlic, worried about all the stuff that we spent the last couple months talking about and speculating about. And when they said, okay, Chris Greer, the general manager, that was a bold move. And they got the quarterback of the future. They've got him in a, now they can put him in a situation where he doesn't have to play right away if he doesn't need to. Ryan Fitzmagic is there to kind of be the bridge guy. And I think he probably happily will play that role. And he probably will play it pretty well. He's a guy you could envision mentoring, though. But you didn't know if the Dolphins were going to actually meet the moment. And I didn't know if they would have the nerve. And we talked all week about the... I thought that this would separate the risk-averse executives and the guys willing to take a risk. And I think the Dolphins were an organization in that position. They couldn't afford and had not earned the right to be as cautious as some other teams with Tua. So they stepped up. They made the pick. And after they made the selection, I was like, wow, okay, they actually did that. Now we're going to see Tua. Perfect situation for him. Everything in place except for... he's going to have to change jersey numbers because I think 13 already belongs to a legend in Miami.
Yeah, I got to tell you, my first wow was when I looked at the family sitting around with all the Hawaiian tribute, you know, the way they were honoring their culture. And my wow was, oh, God, I was almost cringing. Like, I hope we're not looking at this shot for the rest of the night. Like, I hope he doesn't fall out of the top 10 or something like some people had threatened. And I just felt, you know, his story with the family and all that stuff really kind of moved me, and everybody sitting there. And then I kept wondering to myself, like, didn't the family move to Tuscaloosa to watch his college career? Are they in Hawaii with that stuff on, or are they in Alabama? I was just kind of torturing myself wondering what they were doing. But my worry for him, my wow was more of like a relief, like, wow, oh, that's so nice and good for you, Miami. Oh, you didn't make this kid sit there and wait. I fell into the human interest element of Tua just when I saw him with the suit on sitting with his parents and his siblings around him. I couldn't help it. That was the wow moment. That was not the wow moment of the first round, okay? But that was the first wow moment for sure when he actually went fifth and they did actually tank for Tua. And then they won a couple games at the end of the year, Miami, and everybody was like, what are you doing? You're blowing the draft pick. And it all worked out. So I hope they all live happily ever after. It was a beautiful little moment.
Well, you know, I don't want it to oversimplify anything here because, of course, football, as everybody always says, the ultimate team game. But whenever there's a quarterback taken, it always just kind of makes your head peak up a little bit more, at least in my case. We all knew Joe Burrow was going to go number one overall. But, yeah, like you guys just said, seeing Tua go at number five to Miami, which I think was an excellent pick for them, prove that all of these smoke screens and all of the BS and all of the noise that was kind of filtered around, oh, his stock is dropping. Is he going to fall to the second round? Are the Patriots going to trade up? No. All right. This guy's going to be a phenomenal quarterback. Seeing him go number five, it was a grand slam for the Dolphins. And then immediately after that, another quarterback off the board, somebody, Mully, that you and I know are not that high on, and Justin Herbert to the Los Angeles Chargers. He's very tall. Okay, that's why he went number six overall in the draft. Listen, my former roommate, he's from Oregon, so I watched a little bit of Justin Herbert over the past few seasons. Total bum slayer. This guy, he's going to put up huge numbers over inferior opponents, and then you put him in a situation where he's actually got adequate talent facing him down on the other side of the line of scrimmage. He's going to struggle, so I don't think that was a great pick. And then the next quarterback taken was a shock, I think, to almost everyone. Jordan Love going to the Green Bay Packers, which has been a very, I guess, divisive pick. A lot of people dunking on Green Bay, saying, oh, they needed this, they needed a linebacker, they needed a wideout. They can still get all that. But I think if there's any organization that knows what a good quarterback looks like, it's probably Green Bay. So I'm not as well-versed in Jordan Love as a lot of people are, but I think that Green Bay having the confidence to make this pick and not, you know, force him in there immediately. He's obviously going to be behind Rodgers for at least a couple of seasons to aid in his development. I think he'll probably be a better mentor to Jordan Love than Brett Favre was to Rodgers. So I think that, you know, everybody kind of trying to clown on Green Bay for taking a quarterback needs to probably pump the brakes a little bit, because I think it was a very smart move with a lot of foresight.
Well, the Packers moving up to get Love was truly the biggest takeaway, like, wow moment for me. But since Kevin just ended on that, I'll rewind the clock back to a little earlier in the draft. I'm surprised that Isaiah Simmons fell to the Cardinals. I thought the caliber of defender that Simmons is, I thought he would have gone somewhere in the top five even, and he fell to the Cardinals. That was a little surprising to me. So initially, chronologically, that was the biggest wow moment prior to Green Bay's move to fall in love.
It was Jordan. It was for a wow, it was Love. I mean, the draft pretty much went real vanilla and according to plan. I mean, you know, was there no interest in that number three pick that the Lions had, or were they just in? I mean, you figured they could have just went down a few spots and gotten any cornerback that they wanted. I mean, is that kid from Ohio State that good? So the wow was Love. I mean, again, you know, we've been talking for a month about the Bears winning right now. Like, this is the moment. If the Packers aren't trying to win right now, then what in the wide world of sports are they doing? Why would you give a guy 143, 138, whatever it is, million-dollar contract to play quarterback for you, and then draw his replacement? It just, somebody's got to explain that to me. So for a true wow, I mean, everybody's wows are good wows. They all made your ears pop up or your head pop up if you were head bobbing already because it took 90 minutes to get to the first pick when you first sat down in front of the TV. But the first wow moment was the fact that the Packers did that. I was actually thrilled that I was still up at that point and saw that. So, wow, the Green Bay Packers. Wow.
Well, I think that's a multifaceted question.
What was your favorite moment in round one of the NFL draft and why?
Listen, without a shadow of a doubt, my favorite moment was the Dallas Cowboys going on the board at 17. That was the most glorious moment. Number one, you got Jerry. He's sitting there, and he's not quite sure where he's at, but he's dressed to the nines, and he's just he's on this couch, and the way that it looked, somebody said on Twitter that Jerry was making the first pick from the Capitol in the Hunger Games. His first pick. And I laughed out loud when I saw that. When I saw Jerry pop up, I started to laugh. Then you see half of Mike McCarthy's face. Like, that was one of the things that I thought was hysterical, how there was depth and there was like a kind of a deep picture for some guys. And then there were these weird close-ups, like when Andy Reid pops on the screen and he's chewing something. Like, it was like I started laughing at Mike McCarthy. Half his head is off the screen, and then the two of them, they had decided on their pick. The two of them, they could not contain how happy they were with how the draft had gone for them. And there was like these huge smiles from both guys in different places. And I got to tell you, I was laughing aloud on my couch, to the point where a couple of the kids came into the room like, what's so funny? And I'm like, look at these guys. I thought the visual of that was hilarious. And then somebody said, right as they were going to the pick, you don't laugh like that. You're not that happy unless you're taking a skill position player. And sure enough, it's CD Lamb. So I thought that was, for me, just the magical moment of the night.
There was a lot to like. I think we've talked about some of the human interest stuff because a lot of these stories were magnified maybe because of the way it was televised. But, you like the Ruiz story. You loved what you saw with Tua and his family, and there was a lot of stuff there. But as far as the football standpoint, what the first round lacked up until later at the latter stages of it was controversy and, you know, a conflict. And that is what we like in sports, or at least maybe we relish a little bit more in Chicago when that controversy occurs in Green Bay. So my favorite moment of round one was the surprise, was the Packers moving into 26th position and drafting the heir apparent, the heir Jordan, if you will, Jordan Love, to Aaron Rodgers. What it is Brian Gutekunst is as infatuated with Love as Ted Thompson was with Aaron Rodgers. They drafted Aaron Rodgers when Brett Favre was 35, 36, and it's the same dynamic in play here. I don't know if Jordan Love sits 3 years. I don't know if he'll be as ready to take over sooner, or maybe he won't be ready at all. But this isn't Brett Hundley, you know, the who they drafted in out of UCLA a few years back.
Who beat the Bears, by the way.
Yeah, who beat the Bears. This isn't DeShone Kizer, who they traded for from the Browns. This is a guy who's a first-round NFL draft pick, and he is there for a reason. And how they balance all this for a team that hasn't drafted a skill position player in 14 years throughout the course of Aaron Rodgers' career, how they sell this to its fan base and its locker room, that's going to be the next big phase of this, and that is a delicious drama.
I can't believe you reminded me of Brett Hundley beating the Bears, the lowest point of the John Fox era, perhaps, just apropos of nothing. I don't know if it was my favorite moment in the draft, but I think Miami kind of knocked it out of the park. I mentioned that Tua could be potentially the best player in this draft if he does stay healthy, and getting him at number five, not having to move up and trade a ton of draft picks to move up one pick, which is something that we've also seen here in this town recently, you know, being able to stand pat and get the guy they wanted at number five, and then also getting Noah Igbinoghi. I'll work on that one. But getting the cornerback out of Auburn, I think, was a good pick as well. They probably had the best day one out of everybody in a division now that is kind of, I don't want to say up in the air, but certainly in flux when you look at the AFC East. I don't know how much confidence you have in Josh Allen and the Bills to be, you know, a perennial playoff team, or kind of, you know, take that top spot in the division, or what New England's going to do to bounce back now that they've lost Tom Brady. Of course, the Jets kind of stink out loud, but Miami making very, very positive moves, in my opinion, to move forward. So, again, I don't know if it was my favorite moment. My favorite moment was when the thing just got underway, for crying out loud, because it took so long. But I think the Dolphins had the best first round out of everybody.
It was not a surprise that Ohio State cornerback Jeff Okuda was going to get selected in the top three. So when he was selected number three overall, you know, not a surprise, but it was my favorite moment just because of the story, his background. His mother had a, you know, lost her battle to a lymphoma. She had been battling lymphoma since, you know, since Jeff was a very young kid, and she lost her life 6 days after he went into Ohio State. So, you know, it was a touching and tough story. It was just nice to see, you know, him get selected number three overall. It was just a nice moment to see him with his family there. And I guess it was a little bit of a surprise that the Lions actually made a good move in the first round, didn't screw the whole damn thing up.
I'm going kind of the same pew with Mully here. We're going to sit side by side, but for different reasons. So
6 feet apart,
it was the Cowboys with 6 feet apart, right? Well, Mully and I'd sit on Mully's lap. We're that kind of partnership. It was C.D. Lamb. First of all, I thought, wow, when he gets picked, this is so Cowboys. Like, it just screams Cowboys to me. And then the reaction from Michael Irvin, I thought, was great. It was just the whole, like, 10 minutes of television. But I thought I saw this, and I backed up the DVR after they got done while there was a little break in the action. Did anybody notice, like, C.D. Lamb's girlfriend sitting to his left? So
yeah.
He had, like, two or three phones going, and she went to grab one of the phones, and he, like, basically rips it out of her hands. So that, like, I was laughing, and then that's so Cowboys as well. And then this morning, as I'm preparing for the show, this girl, her last name is Rose, Crimson Rose, if I'm saying it right, She used to date Trae Young in the NBA. Now she's with CeeDee Lamb. I mean, what? I mean, you know, she's dating every pro athlete already? I mean, these guys are like in their early 20s. What's going on? So this just, I mean, can you imagine her going to Dallas and getting around I mean, it just, this thing
partying
just
on the yacht,
screams.
Man.
It just screams Cowboys. Look around. If you're interested at all, look around on the web. There is just some salacious stuff about CeeDee Lamb's girlfriend. So, like, it's different than Mully, but it's the same. And it just, the ripping the cell phone. I mean, and I mean, you talk about not social distancing. I mean, there's four people sitting on a couch that's built for like two people, or like one offensive lineman that was drafted. Did you see the size of the guy the Ravens drafted last night? Oh my gosh, that was like the biggest human being I've ever. People think I have a big head. Like his head is like my head, Jay Zawoski's head, and then another person's head. He had the biggest damn head I've ever seen. I don't know what size football helmet you would give that guy. It's the biggest head in the world. And these four people were sitting so close.
People think you have a big head? You hear that from people?
Well, he's got 36-inch thighs.
I had eighth grade football. They didn't have a helmet that would fit my head. So I cracked the center of my head open because the helmet was so small, and they had to order special order one. So for the first 2 weeks, I wore a helmet that was like literally a 3/4 of a size too small. Like fitted baseball hats used to be a big thing, and like it was hard for me to find one that fit my head for some reason. And I wasn't going the Barry Bonds route. My head wasn't growing because I was dropping my drawers and taking a shot of something.
Didn't know we were going to get into phrenology on the program this morning, but here we are.
Yes. But anyway, CeeDee Lamb's girlfriend and going after his cell phone. Check it out. You'll have a good laugh.
That's a question that George McCaskey and Ted Phillips would probably have to answer.
With the 43rd overall pick in the second round of the 2020 NFL Draft, the Bears will select who and who will they take with the 50th overall pick?
Wow, those are tough ones because you just don't know who's going to be there. But I think the one thing you feel good about if you're Ryan Pace is that there's still a lot of players that have first round grades that are on most boards, and I think the Bears will probably have a choice of some guys that they'll definitely sell as the boy. I'm surprised they were still on the board, aren't they always? So I guess if you have to, you don't know how it's going to fall in front of them, which will dictate who's available. But if I had to look at how unpredictable this thing has gone, I believe now that the cornerbacks, there's been a run on cornerbacks, some guys that have been linked to the Bears, some guys that we know that they liked. I don't know that they end up with a cornerback. I think they might end up with a safety instead. At 43, I think if he's still on the board, that Xavier McKinney, they like their Alabama safeties. I think that I could see the Bears with the 43rd pick taking Xavier McKinney. And then with the 50th overall pick, you still have a need at wide receiver. There's still some very good ones on the board if he is still around there. And you never know what teams are going to like certain guys because of certain traits. But KJ Hamler would be the guy I would think the Bears at 50 would get. So if I'm thinking right now, just predicting, not knowing some of the other factors, Xavier McKinney and KJ Hamler.
Wow, that would be an unbelievable draft. And my initial reaction is to say there's no way McKinney is there. It's just not going to happen. He will not last that long. But I never thought he'd be not in the first round.
Me either.
I thought he was a first-round guy, so I don't know what I'm talking about, apparently. A couple of guys that jump out at me, and I don't know that they'll be there either, are Ezra Cleveland, the tackle from Boise State, and Josh Jones, the tackle from Houston. These are big, giant guys. You're talking about the dance of the elephants. You could get offensive tackle there and move someone in. You know, I still don't understand why Trayvon Diggs is on the board. I know he didn't run well, and I know there is a certain profile of players, but I would expect that a couple of Alabama guys, Diggs the cornerback and McKinney the safety, will be gone by the time that the Bears pick. I think that Jalen Johnson from Utah is a corner that we had talked about a little bit as a guy, and I think there's a couple of, you're running low on corners, and you're kind of holding your breath that one of those guys get there. But I think there's going to be offensive linemen again. If they wind up in this draft, and I know he doesn't run great, but given the size of Trayvon Diggs, if they could get a guy like that, a corner like that, he would be a real coup, I think, for them. A McKinney as well. But if it ends up being a corner, you kind of have to hold your breath a little that someone like Johnson Lass or even the kid, I'm trying to go through my notes as I'm talking here, the kid from the other corner from LSU, Fulton, was a guy that a lot of people
Christian
thought
Fulton,
might...
Christian Fulton, yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He is a guy people thought might have gone already or be someone that could. But other than those two corners, you're kind of running out of that position. And all of those safeties are there. I mean, is it possible that they could wind up with a pretty damn good safety from a smaller school? Wouldn't that make sense if you're looking at the way that the general manager has operated in the past? Yeah. So I think that that McKinney probably goes off the board, and they're sitting there, and they're maybe Jeremy Chinn is there. Would that bother you if they got Kyle Duggar, the kid from Division II?
Let's talk about that later. Yeah.
Safeties. I'm just saying those two guys are guys that could be there. That maybe they go with the safety if McKinney isn't there, and then maybe, as you say, the Penn State speedster would be a good pick for them.
Well, Mully, over the past few weeks, you've really been advocating the Bears taking a cornerback, so now I can't get that out of my mind. The ones that I had written down were Jalen Johnson out of Utah. You know, he is big and he is fast. He looks like a great prospect. And then you can't go wrong with, again, back to the SEC, Fulton from LSU, and then Trayvon Diggs from Alabama as well. I'd be happy with any of those picks at number 43. And as far as number 50, I think you go with a wide receiver. The name I pulled this morning was Denzel Mims out of Baylor. I think he's a very intriguing prospect, but there are plenty of wide receivers available still. You know, you guys have talked about also how much the depth at wideout is here. I think if they come away with a corner and a wideout, I will be pleased.
I think it's going to end up being, despite my emphasis on wide receiver, I think it will be safety Jeremy Chinn that gets selected with the 43rd pick, and they're going to focus on linemen with number 50, and I think it's going to be Lloyd Cousenberry from LSU. Those are the picks that I think the Bears are going to go with. I hope Ryan Pace proves me wrong and there is the best wide receiver available, but I just think they're going to go best player available instead of wide receiver.
You know, it's hard to make these decisions in these uncertain times, Ray.
Thanks, Ryan.
Well, this is not going to surprise anybody, but if Claypool is there at 43, I mean, I think you got to go get that guy, because as Dan Shonka pointed out yesterday, you know, he might be able to cover you in two spots at wide receiver and also the tight end that doesn't block. You could line him up in that spot, right? You wouldn't trust him to block. He could get in the way of somebody, but he wouldn't block. He doesn't have much in the way of a rear end. If Komet's there at 50, if the best tight end in the draft is still there at 50, you need a plan going forward at tight end. You do. I mean, if you don't, I mean, what are you talking about? Now, at 43, if Claypool's gone, Grant Delpit, safety LSU, that might be a really great tandem, an LSU and an Alabama guy playing safety for you for the next 8 to 10 years together. That could be pretty good. I got to know more about Chinn. Chinn got on my radar yesterday again with Dan Shonka. But I heard David say, we got to talk about that. And are you a little bit worried about the lower level schools and using a pick? Again, the Bears need to win now. The offensive line is gone, and somebody's got to sell me on one of these corners that's left. I know they need a corner, but I don't know that the guys that are left at 43 or 50 are going to be guys that you can trust opposite Fuller all the time. I think you got to go buy Prince. You got to hope that Prince is still out there and go pay him a couple of bucks.
Ryan Pace also needs to know what kind of car Jeremy Chinn drives.
That's the most important thing of all, yes.
Ooh, that's a good question.
5:55, by the way, we made it to before the first Cole Kmet reference. I'm very proud of everyone. What did
well,
you?
The money was on me, wasn't it?
Yeah, you were David for sure. What do you make of the influx of talent into the NFC North? Did the Bears division opponents get a little bit better, significantly better, or about the same?
You know, I think the corner Okuna is a great player, and I think that he is really going to help that defense. I also think that he's replacing a guy, so I don't worry about Detroit getting significantly better. They're in an interesting position because they really kind of have to win. So I think that's something to keep an eye on. I like the Minnesota Vikings draft. They got the corner and they got the wide receiver and they got good ones. And I think you feel good about them. That's the draft I would love to see the Bears get. Green Bay is something to worry about down the road. But I think that maybe they damaged themselves a little bit in the short term. Now, they can get receivers out of this draft. There's tons of guys there, and they still have picks. But I wonder how that's going to play with Aaron Rodgers. And he doesn't seem shy about giving his opinion on things. So I find that one really interesting. It doesn't damage the Bears in the immediate future.
He made that crap up.
Yeah, maybe down the line it damages the Bears. But that didn't worry me because I don't expect to see Jordan Love. But the Vikings definitely got better. But they created some holes in the offseason, and they managed to fill them.
The Lions picked the best player last night in the division, but it probably had the least impact on what's going to happen in the NFC North next season, if that makes any sense at all. I think Okuda is a terrific corner, but he does replace Darius Slay, and that's not going to be something you worry about. They needed to do that, and you don't really sit around worrying about the Lions. The Vikings, different story. They had a nice night because they lost two veterans in Stephon Diggs. They got rid of him for the Buffalo Bills trade, and that was, in their mind, addition by subtraction. And Xavier Rhodes, the cornerback who had been kind of toast lately, and they replaced those guys with rookies. And I know they're going to be rookies, but I think that in Justin Jefferson and Gladney, they got two guys that could be plug-and-play guys, and I think they're going to have an impact on the NFC North race and maybe give the Vikings a little bit of a boost at key positions. As for the Packers, they drafted the next Bears nemesis. I mean, that's what he's there to do. I would have been more concerned about Green Bay, though, had they drafted a wide receiver with Aaron Rodgers to make him kind of elevate his play. But they chose Love over. They followed their heart, not their head, and they picked a quarterback that they think is going to be the next Bears nemesis.
I'm with you guys on Minnesota. I think they, I said Miami might have had the best first day out of any team. You could put Minnesota right up there as 1B if you want. You know, Justin Jefferson is going to be an absolute stud. And then they get the corner from TCU as well with their second pick, a very sensible draft replacing, David, like you just alluded to, what they subtracted. I think Jordan Love in due time, David, I think you're right about that one as well, will be the next Bears nemesis. I think down the line we're going to be looking at that as a sensible pick, even though it's kind of divisive this morning. And as far as Detroit, yeah, they got a really good player, but they have so many other holes to fill, and they're, you know, a loser franchise with a buffoon for a head coach, so I'm not worried about the Lions ever.
I'm going to say significantly better overall, but, you know, the Bears still have a chance here to get significantly better themselves, so it's not a lost cause.
Yeah, I think the key word, bit better. I mean, you know, I think the Vikings made a lateral move and saved some money. So they replaced a wide receiver that they lost, and they replaced a cornerback that they lost, both of whom are significantly younger and cheaper. We'll see if they're as good, but that's to be determined. I don't think the Packers got better last night. And, you know, Detroit was a very safe pick. But again, if you're holding on to Matthew Stafford, shouldn't you have gotten him a weapon? Shouldn't you have gotten somebody? And I'll say Kmet's name again. If I thought the Packers were going to take Kmet with that pick. They're desperate for somebody for Aaron Rodgers to throw the ball to. So I do think the Bears have a chance to. I think the Bears have the best chance if they sit chilly at 43-50, they have an opportunity to make the biggest move in the NFC North based on these two picks tonight at 43-50.
2-6-44-67-67. Did you enjoy it? Did you like the draft? Did you like the first time we've had a virtual draft? And what about players? Who was your guy? How did you like it? Does this damage what you think the Bears can do in the second round? 312-644-6767. We'll break it all down next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.